Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. The effect of the Tea Party in the current session of Congress is the opening topic of our conversation with Congressman Sam Farr, recorded in his office in Washington, D.C. on September 26, 2011.
Well, the Tea Party had a tremendous effect on Washington. That election essentially saw that the Democrats and progressives just sort of sat it out. It was a non-presidential election, so the voter turnout is always down. But the shock effect of, first in the Republican Party, of Senator Bennett from Utah being defeated in the primary. I mean, he's very conservative. You don't think you could get more conservative than Bennett. Very well liked in the Senate. Defeated by the right wing within his party and his state, has scared all Republicans who are up for re-election this year that if they don't move to the right, they're going to be in trouble. And if you've watched the presidential debates, you see that there's an ultra-conservative group turning out to these presidential primary debates. And it scares the nation because on the other side, there aren't a lot of protests, there aren't a lot of reaction to it. People keep saying in Congress, why don't you people speak and protest these things? And I tell people we do every single day that the passions in Congress on the left are as strong as they've ever been in history. The difference is the press does not report it. And the press wants controversy. The Tea Party has given them the controversy, and the Tea Party is getting the news.
So you're saying the press doesn't report it, not because they are supportive of it, but they want to sell their papers.
Yeah, the press, as we know it today, is for sale. I mean, it's not sort of the intellectual NPR, or remember Walter Cronkite on television when we were younger, and people that it just had voices of reason, voices of responsibility, credible news where you didn't spin it and give your opinion of what it was. It was just straight reporting. Every news organization and every cable show now is an opinionated show being sold to the right side or left side, whether it be Fox News or MSNBC. CNN seems to be in the middle, except if you're right wing, you would brand it as a left-wing cable program.
Among many people that I hear, Congress doesn't do anything. Let's get everybody out.
Well, if you throw all the bums out, the same people who have been voting in 2010 are going to vote in 2012, and they're going to elect like kinds of people. So you're not going to get anything different in Congress. You're going to totally unexperienced Congress, which a naive legislature does not give you a better product. Naive everything, teachers, doesn't give you better teaching or better businesses or anything like that. Experience does count, and there are a lot of people that know a lot about how to govern. The problem is we need a majority, and to get that majority, we need people on the ground to be involved. You don't sign up for Congress to do easy. And everything that is controversial is hard. And I always tell people, look, you've got a lot of lobbyists in town. And rather than just getting mad at lobbyists, lobbyists do a very good job of speaking for their special interest as educators. They come in and educate you. Here's the problem, and here's what we would like you to do. I always say they can tell me what's broken, but only you can get me to fix it. You in my district, because you're the one who elect me, not the lobbyist, and you're the ones that I have to get reelected by next year. You hold my contract, and I think that where we've seen it is the American public has just fallen down in its ability to really be responsible civic citizens.
Let's talk about the effect in congressional committees where so many decisions are made of the 43 members of Congress within the Tea Party category who have had no prior experience in elective office.
Well, that's a very good question, Barry, because what I find shocking is that we elected people that have never been in an elective office, and they elected them with pride. I don't know a damn thing about anything. I hate government. Elect me, and I'll get it changed. Well, over the 200 years we've been in existence, we have really created a very sophisticated democracy in the United States, every single agency of the federal government is incredibly complex, full of regulations, full of statutory requirements, through hiring well-informed people to become civil servants to carry out these functions. And
well, let me
to
ask,
think an amateur is going to come up and figure out how to do it. What all they want to do is kick it or blow it up.
Let me ask about the members of the Tea Party, members of Congress, who do not attend or who walk out of committee hearings.
Well, I think I told you I'm the senior member, ranking member on the Appropriations Committee for the Committee on Agriculture, which is all the USDA and the Food and Drug Administration, our jurisdiction.
Before we get in there too far, explain what ranking member means.
Okay, that's a good, I'm glad you asked. Ranking is the only time it's ever used is in Washington. It's not used at the state and local government, but essentially it's the top most senior member of the minority party. So right now the Republicans are in charge, so all of the committees are chaired by Republicans. What we might call the vice chair, or the second person, is the senior ranking Democrat. Sometimes those Democrats may have more seniority than the Republican, but their title is ranking member. So they're the chief Democrat on that committee, and if the tides were turned, they would become the chair, and the Republican chair would become the ranking member.
So, from your perspective on the Agricultural Subcommittee of the Appropriations Committee, what are the problems that are being caused by the members who do not participate in the committee process?
Well, the Republicans have put some of their freshman members on these very senior, very important committees. Usually you have to spend a couple terms in Congress before you can get on these. To their credit, they allowed freshmen to get on there. But some of these freshmen, these Tea Party members, don't want to stick around for the full hearing. They don't want to get educated. They came here with, I hate government. My job is to cut, squeeze, and trim it. I'm going to tell you what I want, and then I'm going to leave the room. And I don't want to get confused by all this information and all this gobbledygook that I don't understand. And they do. They walk out because they don't want to be informed. How their constituency thinks that that's an effective representative, I have no idea. It's a celebration of ignorance.
There's a situation that you told me about of a member who asked a staff person to make proposals for them.
Well, what this member did was ask the Secretary of Agriculture, said, it came in with the new Obama budget, which is cutting what we did last year. And they had gone through a fine-tooth comb. And the Republicans are saying, we don't care how carefully you went through it. We want you to cut this budget back to 2006. I mean, just think about it. That sounds good, right? Cut government back to its spending levels of 2006. But do it across the board. Now, think in your own life. That means that you wouldn't have to pay any more for your water bill than you paid in 2006, or your PG&E bill, or your garbage bill, or your cable bill, or your gasoline for your vehicles. I mean, it's impossible just to have a cut across the board back to 2006, and you're not lowering salaries, so you're going to have huge cuts, and it's going to be very difficult to implement. So having said that, his point was, I want you to cut your budget by 25% and come in and tell me how you're going to cut it. And the secretary very politely said to the congressman, you're on the committee of jurisdiction. You give us our money. If you want to cut it by 25%, that's your responsibility. If you want me to tell you what I would recommend, I need about 2 years to do that, because this is a $100 billion agency. The law says if I get cuts, I have to fire the last person I hired. That's part of the statutory requirements of a personnel management in the United States. And that last person I hired might be the most important person in the agency. So give me some time to be very smart about this, and I can come back to you. Otherwise, and I see what you're having right now, is these are across-the-board cuts. And the more they cut, there's going to be a point here where the rubber hits the road, and people at the street level are going to say, oh my God, you mean you're eliminating that program? You're beginning to hear that as this trickles down to the state level, because California particularly is hit at the state level for the last 10 years. They haven't been able to resolve this stuff. Let's dump it all in local government.
Let's put that into perspective. I understand that you were saying it was a member of Congress sitting on the Agricultural Appropriations Subcommittee who asked the Secretary of Agriculture for suggestions, who told that member of Congress that that's your job to decide, not my job.
to...
Yeah, if you put this in perspective, what is Congress of the United States Congress? It's the House of Representatives and the Senate. It's 535 members of the House. It's 100 members of the Senate. And together, they create the Board of Directors for the United States of America. What is that Board of Directors' responsibility? That is to direct, to make the policy, to make the law, and decide how much money the government's going to spend. The President of the United States is a chief executive officer. His job is to manage the laws that created by Congress and to manage the budget that Congress gives him. Now, it's a give and take. The president presents his budget. He proposes. But after it goes through all the committees in Congress, we change that budget. It's maybe more or less than what the president had. It could be far less or it could be a little bit more. And each program rises or falls on its own merits.
In walking up to your office today, you mentioned that the powers that currently be in the House of Representatives ended the recycling program within the halls of Congress. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I started a recycling program because I figured we could make money off our waste rather than spending millions of dollars on just trying to haul it off. And we started a recycling program, papers and waste, and we actually could make some money on it. And Nancy Pelosi, when she was Speaker, had a whole thing of greening the Capitol by not only changing the lights and fluorescent lights and bringing down the cost, but changing the fuel source from the coal-fired generators to natural gas-fired generators and requiring that all the paper in Congress be recycled paper and that all of the waste in the cafeteria be done with zero-waste products.
And that changed.
And when the Republicans got in, they changed it all. They just said, that's just silly waste of money.
And that change occurred.
That changed this year, and it's just nuts. And we even had a bill debated on the floor. Fortunately, it was defeated, but this is how crazy it is. Prohibiting the education of any child, any person under the age of 18 from learning about global warming or the effects of energy conservation. It essentially put the education of global warming and energy conservation in the same category as child pornography.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Congressman Sam Farr, who represents the Santa Cruz and Monterey counties in California in the United States House of Representatives. We're meeting in his office in Washington, D.C., and this interview was recorded on Monday, September 26th, 2011. Sam, what brought about the deactivization that occurred nationwide, resulting in the election of Barack Obama 2.5 years ago, that faltered at the midterm election a year ago?
Well, Barry, I think every sociologist, every political scientist is discovering, is studying that to this day to try to analyze what happened in America. What's this flip? And essentially what I've heard is, look, what happened in 2008 was that a lot of groups nationally had organized and been at it a long time. Groups like the gay rights movement, the women's movement, the environmental movements and all the different phases of environmental movements. Sort of the progressive issues of the United States had been able to form in their states and communities a good base. And what happened is that Barack Obama became the candidate that they could all identify with, not sort of put together by any kind of glue other than they identified with one candidate over the other, that this is the candidate that represents our viewpoint. And collectively started this incredible grassroots political movement in the United States that too many people just shockingly elected the first African-American to presidency of the United States. The shock was to those that just think that this country would have never done that, and to the fact that his philosophy was too far to the left for them. And so what I call essentially the hate groups ended up creating a network, labeling that network as a Tea Party. Tea Party has no officers. It's not a registered party in any state. It's really non-existent. It's a movement. It's a movement. The Tea Party movement is essentially representational of all the groups that hated the progressive issues in the United States. And what uniquely they've done is captured something that I think that we've just totally missed, which is instead of identifying with a candidate, they've identified with a grassroots, let's reinvent government. Let's reinvent the image of the United States. And let's do it through the internet. Let's do it through collaboratives. So the Republican Party the right wing of the Republican Party, which is extremely well-funded, privately funded. I mean, not millions, billions of dollars in think tanks and things like that, have concluded the way to reorganize the politics in America is to get a participatory kind of, let's rewrite the Constitution. Let's rewrite the American dream. And that dream is extremely conservative, very anti-government, and it's having its success. Now that dream is trying to identify is who is their candidate. And that's one of the problems you're seeing with the Republicans having to, that shifts from, you know, it was Michelle Bachmann, it was Sarah Palin, and it was Governor Perry, and it doesn't seem to be Romney. But on the other hand, I think what Romney is getting is the reaction from mainline Republicans that these other candidates are just too extreme and don't speak for us. So there's quite a struggle within the Republican Party between the Tea Party members and the moderates as who can beat Barack Obama.
Well, let's stay there for a minute and focus on the people who turn out for these presidential debates in the Republican Party primaries. What's your thought about that?
I think emotions have a big effect on people turning out. And it seems to me that anger is a stronger motivator than love. And that's why you get people angry with negative average hate pieces and dirty campaigning and negative campaigning, as they call it, because negative campaigning motivates the anger in you to go out and, oh my God, anything but this guy, this awful candidate.
You were talking a few moments ago about the hate groups within the Republican Party. Who are they? What do they hate?
Oh, I think they hate the fact that it's an African-American president was elected. They hate the fact that Congress and president have opened up the military to recognizing that people who are gay can serve. I think they hate the fact that it's a pro-choice Congress and a pro-choice president. The list goes on. It's a group that has supported the environmental movement in the country. I mean, it's everything that has been happening in the last decade, sort of moving towards, you know, it's changing the attitudes that government should regulate banks. It's more regulatory that where we have blown it with Wall Street, that we ought to regulate it more. We passed a bill to do that, where we were trying to figure out how to get a handle on cost of government. The biggest cost of government's health care. So to wrap our rounds around it, the last portion of health care that no Congress in history has been able to deal with was to modernize healthcare in America with the Obamacare, as it's nicknamed by the right. It's been something that's just infuriated them and drives fear for those that are storming the flames of, oh my God, the country's going falling apart.
On the other side, President Obama's ratings are lower than they've ever been. There are many people who supported him who say he's let us down. What do you see as either one, will happen, or two, is a way of motivating people who voted for Obama 3 years ago to vote for him next year and support him?
I think what we have to realize is that he didn't let us down. He never raised us up because he couldn't. Because when he got here, there's a ceiling on where he could go. He just couldn't rise because of the ability of the Senate at the time to block without getting Republicans involved. I mean, it's a stupid Senate rule on this 60-vote requirement to block any kind of veto or hold on legislation. And the Senate can't change that, lack of leadership in the Senate. And then this year, the Republicans taking over the House with the statement that whatever the president wants to do, we're going to stop it. So the president goes to the Republicans. He's played in their corner a lot, saying, what do you want? I'll help you get there. You give me some of your votes. They give him ideas. He embraces it, and they turn around and don't give it to him because they say, well, if we give it to him, this passes, you get credit for it. And we don't want you to get credit because we don't want you to be president. So we've come to essentially a gridlock here in Washington of those Republicans who are doing everything they can to hold back on government with the guys that, look, at the whole, and their messaging is that the entire problem of the United States is based on one thing. It's a deficit.
That's not was the brought about by a Republican that took over from Clinton in 2000 when we had a surplus.
Look, if there's been the biggest, I don't say lies, but just the people that are, you know, ignored it, stuck their head in the sand. And I used to call my Republicans when the deficit was going up and say, you guys are deficit hawks. Why don't you let it go? And, oh, well, it's only a small percentage of the GDP, you know. They just dropped the whole thing under Bush. They put the Iraq war on a credit card. They put the Afghan war on a credit card. They put the Medicare Part D on a credit card. They put everything on a credit card. And that credit card, I mean, if you look at the deficit, if indeed the market hadn't turned down, we wouldn't have a deficit, except for what they created. The Democrats have not added to this. Now, you can argue that, well, they did when they did the bailout. But remember, the bailout, and Barack's getting a bad rap on this, the bailout was what every economist told us, that if the American government, with its ability to spend, didn't go in and rescue the American economy, rescue it, perhaps rescue the free world economy, that it would have crashed. It would have crashed big. We put a Band-Aid on it. Congress didn't spend as much as they told us they wanted. They said, you're going to have to do $1.5 trillion. We did almost $1 trillion. About $800 billion, and we did spend that. We saved a lot of jobs, and we tried to improve the infrastructure. Now the Republicans don't want us to do that again. That's what part of the president's jobs plan is, only this time he says, let's close these loopholes on the richest people in the United States and on these oil companies that are getting away with incentives, taxpayer incentives to drill oil. Come on. You don't need it when oil's at the price it is. So let's just close these things that don't make any sense anymore and aren't fair. And we can have some revenue to pay for these investment and jobs. But the Republicans don't want to give one single vote, one vote to be able to do that.
So what do you see is going to happen in the fall of 2012?
I think things are going to get worse between now and fall, and the nation's going to have to wake up, and the progressives are going to have to realize that Barack inherited a bigger mess than anybody had thought of, and you can't blame him for not being able to carry us to that promised land that he made in the elections. You're going to have to get out there and work, because frankly, you're just going to have to look around at what the alternative would be. The alternative would be, I think, the loss of America. I really do believe.
The alternative being that if there's a Republican presidency and control of Congress, is that what you're suggesting?
If that happens, I don't see any bright future for America. I see America divided. I see America forced into demonstrations of the rich versus the poor, black versus white or brown or whatever it is. I see America dissolving itself into a really sad state of affairs.
Let's turn to the Peace Corps. This past weekend here in Washington, D.C., there was the celebration of the 50th anniversary of organizing the Peace Corps, something that was dear to your heart and mine when you were a volunteer in Colombia and I was a volunteer in Peru, that for us ended when we started law school the summer of 1966.
Well, Barry, I think it's the greatest thing that America's ever done. I think the national park system's the greatest, the land thing we've ever done, and I think Peace Corps is the greatest human thing we've ever done. It is incredibly effective. You know, it costs 12 times more for the United States to send a soldier abroad than a Peace Corps volunteer. It costs 4 times more to send somebody in the State Department or USAID in our diplomatic service abroad than a Peace Corps volunteer. It is the best bang for the buck. It is still the most popular job in the federal government. We have an average of 18,000 people a year applying for the Peace Corps. Because Congress hasn't given the Peace Corps enough money, they can only fill an average of 4,000 jobs a year. There's about almost 8,000 people in the Peace Corps. So every year, half of those come up, be 4,000 jobs. To me, it's a jobs plan, is if Congress would get off its butt and fund it. In fact, the Republicans just cut $25 million out of the Peace Corps budget. Which means we're going to have to close some countries.
8,000 volunteers a year is half the number of when you and I were volunteers 45 years ago.
That's right. There were 15,000 volunteers. And ironically, let me just listen to this. It's really important. President Kennedy's discussion with Sergeant Shriver and the team when they formed the Peace Corps was his dream was that we would have 100,000 Americans stationed overseas. If you look at the first countries we went to Iran, we went to Afghanistan. Just think, if all these years we would have had thousands and thousands of Americans working at the grassroots level in the most impoverished areas in those countries, do you think that we would have 9/11 happen in this country? I doubt it.
The other interesting fact that I'd like you to share with our listeners is the amount of money, the total budget for the Peace Corps in the past 50 years compared to the budget of 5 days of the war in Iraq.
Well, the Peace Corps budget is $375 million. That's less than what we spend on military bands.
That's an annual budget.
Yes, and it's been less than that in years past. In essence, the budget is less than 5 hours of warfare in Iraq, and probably the same if you compared it to Afghanistan. It is, in the picture of big things in Washington, it's nothing. We spend almost that much on advertising agriculture abroad. The budget I was, you know, we're dealing with this with Colombia and the drug stuff. We give Colombia aid to both the military and the government that it, just that country alone exceeds the entire budget of the Peace Corps. The aid to Egypt and Israel is twice that of what we give to the Peace Corps, just to those countries. So in whatever perspective you want to put it on, it's just a tiny amount of money, but it does one of the most effective jobs of foreign aid of anything you can imagine.
Well, Sam Farr, Congressman from Monterey and Santa Cruz County in California, thank you for being with us on Radio Curious, and tell us about a eureka moment or an epiphany in your life that you live by.
Well, Barry, while I was in the Peace Corps, my sister, younger sister, came to visit me right after my mother died, and she fell off a horse and was rushed to a hospital, and they had no ability to take care of her because they didn't have any equipment. It was a rural hospital, and she died on the operating table. Flying back into country after that accident, I was kind of angry, thinking and, you know, realizing that it was just because you're an American and have a passport and have some money in your wallet doesn't mean you're exempt or immune from poverty, from being able to get access to quality health care, quality education. So I was flying back to Colombia and being just kind of angry at Third World, like, you know, why does this have to happen? And it really was an aha, if not epiphany, not a spiritual moment for me. It was, oh my God, why am I coming back? Isn't this what the Peace Corps is all about? That you've really learned firsthand that people that don't have access to health care, don't have access to a safe place to sleep, don't have a future. Aren't we trying to change that?
And what would you like to do with the remainder of your one precious life?
Well, I'd like to get the Peace Corps doubled. I'd like to save the oceans, which are two of my most passionate things. And I'd like to get organic and fresh fruits and vegetables in every school and feeding institution in the United States.
And finally, is there a book that you can recommend?
Well, I'm reading Homegrown Democrat by Harrison Keeler, A Plain Few Thoughts from the Heart of America.
Sam Farr, Congressman from Monterey and Santa Cruz County in California. Thank you for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry.
This interview with Congressman Sam Farr was recorded in his office in Washington, D.C. on September 26, 2011. The book that Sam Farr recommends is Homegrown Democrat by Garrison Keillor. All Radio Curious programs are free at our website, radiocurious.org. Our phone is 707-462-6541. Email is curious@radiocurious.org. Christina Onestad is our associate producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.